that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
1 in 8. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
1 in 8, start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome back to another episode on your Over the Monster podcast feed. We are coming to you tonight. It is very late and I can't talk right now. We are coming to you right after the Game 1 loss in Houston. Red Sox dropped first game of the ALCS 5-4. It is me, Matt, and I am joined by Keaton to talk about this one. And Keaton, it was a close one. It felt like a very winnable game, but tough way to start this series for the Red Sox.
Yeah. Frustrating is a good way to put it.
I guess we should probably start where they started. That was with Chris Sale. It was kind of a surprise. The Red Sox went with Sale for the first game of the series. Obviously, Nate Eovaldi has been their best pitcher this year. Sale has not looked great lately, but they had kind of been hyping him up the last couple days. They had figured out what was ailing him. I thought he looked better than he had before. His slider and fastball were a little bit crisper, but the command was still clearly off. He still wasn't really using his changeup all that much. And he gave up a lot of base runners. He only gave up one run in 2 2/3, but it really was not as pretty as that may sound, even if it doesn't sound that pretty. I guess he deserves some credit for making big pitches when he needed them, but it wasn't what you wanted to start off the series. I don't know. Obviously, hindsight is 20/20, but are you looking at this as a mistake now that they started with Chris Sale and that's what he looked like?
Yeah, with hindsight, yes. I do agree that he looked crisper, but he still wasn't all that effective. He was still walking too many. He still got hit really hard. I guess if Core is looking at it from a perspective of, you know, unless Evaldi throws a complete game, we're going to have to use guys out of the bullpen in game one. And then if Chris Sale does what he does here, we'll have to basically double dip. And then maybe some guys aren't available for game three. So you just try and say, hey, well, if we need to go, you know, use a bunch of relief arms, we'd rather do it with everybody on full rest. But I'd also rather just win game one and just figure out the rest. So yeah, I would have gone with Evaldi, but I think the other part that frustrates, or I mean, maybe this is kind of my own fault for reading too much into the hype, because like you said, the Red Sox, it seemed like from what was being reported, were extremely confident in Chris Sale, but he never threw his change. He threw it four times in 61 pitches, and the changeup was what we were all what was being reported on as they figured it out, and he's going to be using it again. For context, he used changeup usage was 7% tonight. His season usage is 20, so it wasn't even close. So I don't feel like he really had confidence in whatever they thought they had found. Although he did look a little bit crisper, but I don't know how much you can put that on the tweaks as much as just him having some extra rest with having the previous series over.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds right. And when the decision was announced, I kind of gave them the benefit of the doubt, because you figure, I mean, if they're going to talk about him being right as much, they're not going to say it unless they're right. And like you said, I mean, it seemed like, at least by the reports, that it all came down to the changeup. So you would think that if they're going to say that, then at least the changeup is going to be something that he's going to try and use. He threw one in the first inning. So it's not like he just like tried a few in the first inning and didn't have feel and just abandoned it. I mean, it was just like you said, he only threw four all game. So that was definitely disappointing. And it was, I mean, it was extremely lucky that he had only given up one run and the Astros only had one run at that point. I mean, both offenses kind of left a lot on the table early on, and then Kike Hernandez took over sort of in the second and third inning. He ended the second inning, kind of saved Chris Sale with a big diving catch, although it was a little bit his fault that he had to dive in the first place. But it was an outstanding catch to end that inning. And then it was one of those things where announcers are always like, how often do you see a guy make a great defensive play and then come to lead off the next inning with a big hit? And it's like, never. Like, that very, very rarely happens. But it actually happened this time. Kike Hernandez did get the home run to lead off the inning after the diving catch, tied the game. Red Sox got three from there. And then it was kind of all about the bullpen usage. And, I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. It was weird because I didn't really disagree with many of the decisions in a vacuum. Like, on their own, they all kind of made sense. But we got through this game where the Red Sox were either leading or within a run for pretty much the entire game, and Garrett Whitlock never pitched. And, I mean, I don't know if there was any moves that stood out to you or anything specifically, but to me, I mean, it's just unacceptable generally that Garrett Whitlock doesn't pitch in a game like this. I mean, that just can't happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm not a real big fan of Sarmura and Perez closing it out when it was a close game, but I guess at that point, you know, Robles had given up the lead. It was still a one-run game, but there was so much room for it to go way worse with both Sarmura and Perez, and it kind of seemed like maybe waving the white flag in game one, which, again, not a huge fan of.
Yeah.
But I think some of it I kind of question there, like Houck only going one inning. I know he gave up the home run to tie it, but I feel like, particularly the way he's been used in the past, you can get more than one inning out of him, and then you don't, and like, you keep it at a one run, you keep the offense going in there, and then kind of maybe just turn it over to Whitlock immediately after two from Houck, and then he might be able to get you to the end of the game. Yeah, it's depending on how it played out, but for it to be that close for that long and not see Whitlock at all, not a big fan of that decision making.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that just seems like something that can't happen. As far as the Houck thing, I kind of am with Cora with that one. He did not look right. I was kind of expecting more out of him after the layoff. He didn't look great in his last appearance in the ALDS, but he had just thrown like 60 pitches 2 days before. So that one was a little more understandable. I thought he was going to come out looking sharp here, and he threw some spinners up there, and one of them got smoked by Altuve, and that was kind of the big hit for Houston in this game. So I was okay with him only going one. I kind of felt like that messed with Cora's plan a little bit. But I got it. I guess the one that I had the most issue with, I mean, Sawamura for sure. You can't use Sawamura in a one-run game. Robles, I thought, that one I kind of went back and forth on. Robles came in to face the meat of the order, Bregman. Alvarez Correa ended up giving up the go-ahead homer to Correa, who pointed at his watch for some reason. I don't really know what the deal with that celebration was. It was his time.
That's what he was saying. It was his time. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess don't give up a home run if you don't want a guy to do that, but it was a strange one. But anyways, I think I probably would have liked to see Whitlock there. It was still a tie game at that point. You're facing the best hitters. But I kind of got not doing that because you knew those guys were probably going to come up again. And you could just use Whitlock at that point, but then you just didn't get a chance to use Whitlock at that point. The other big managerial decision, this one I'm already laughing. I just kind of have to laugh at because it's just so over the top absurd. What inning was that with Danny Santana? That was the eighth, right? Danny Santana, Hunter Renfroe was due up to face Kendall Graveman in the eighth, and Danny Santana pinch hit for him to lead off, and I mean, what were you thinking at that point? Because that was just the most baffling move I can remember in a very, very long time. Probably since Brandon Workman took an at-bat for himself in the 2013 World Series.
Yeah, I was right there with you again on this one. I mean, you can get too cute with playing these matchups like this, and that really kind of seemed like the moment where Cora just overthought it, given the situation. Pinch-hitting Renfroe for somebody who hit 181 on the season with no power.
And he's had like five at-bats since July something like that, since like early July.
That's the two. So, I mean, that kind of falls in line with the Sawamura thing, right? Sawamura hadn't pitched in 35 days. What was he doing in this game?
Yeah. I mean, with the Santana one, the explanation was that Graveman is great against righties, not so great against lefties. Santana's a switch hitter, which is fine, but like, you got to take into context who these hitters are. We're talking about Danny Santana. It's not like all lefties are created equal. Danny Santana, very well. Is Jeff Mathis still playing? I don't know. I lose track of Jeff Mathis. But Danny Santana might be the worst hitter in baseball in the non-Jeff Mathis division. he can't get an at bat in a close game in the playoffs. It's unacceptable. And I think maybe some of the other things might overshadow that. And there were other issues and the offense had other chances, and it's not Danny Santana's fault. I don't want to rag on the guy too much, but that was just, it was baffling. I don't know. I don't really know what else to say about it. It was just, I'm not sure why he's on the roster in the first place. And if you're going to use him like that, he's got to come off because he cannot be used like that.
Yeah. So this is just kind of following that confusion. Like, if you were only going to use him as a pinch runner, I get it. If you thought that you were going to need to get an at bat out of that roster spot, it has to be Duran.
Yeah, or literally anybody else. I would rather see Franchi Cordero getting that at bat than Danny Santana. Yikes. And I say that totally sincerely. I don't understand. Like I said, I think he was getting a little too cute. And even if you want to use the lefty, just use Travis Shaw. Like, you had Travis Shaw and you used him with two outs. He almost hit a home run and ended up dying at the warning track. But, I mean, it's not like Santana's the only lefty on the bench either.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
So that was, it was a frustrating game. And I think, I think games like this, we tend to put a lot on the manager, and I don't want to make it seem like it was all the manager. There were some bad pitches. Like I said, Houck's pitch on the home run was not a good one. The Correa home run was not a bomb, but it was not a good pitch from Robles. These are guys that they're going to need to pitch well. If they're going to go anywhere, and they also didn't get it done. On the other side, the Red Sox did the job offensively in terms of, and this is something we talked about in the preview, is getting the pitcher out. I think that's what you said, yep. Getting the starting pitcher yep. out early to face this Houston bullpen, and that's what they did. Valdez lasted the same distance as Sale, went 2 2/3. His control was just awful. Got a couple big swings and misses. The Red Sox probably should have gotten more off him. He's a ground ball machine, so he got some big double plays, but knocked him out in the third inning. And then you have the Houston bullpen, which, like we talked about, it's not a bad bullpen, but it's certainly not the strength of their roster, and they got shut down by them. The only guy they scored a run off in the bullpen was Ryan Pressly, who's their best reliever. So I think a lot of the other stuff is going to get more attention, but the offense just didn't get it done in this game, and we know the Red Sox aren't gonna be able to win if the offense is like this.
No, and I think really we kind of, with the exception of the first inning, right, loading the bases and not getting any runs, the first five innings went incredibly according to plan, kind of how we had outlined there so that kind of adds to the frustration to me, because for a little over half of the game, they followed the very obvious blueprint they needed to follow to get this game, and they had a lead at that point, and then it just all fell apart over the back half. And as Bob pointed out, in a series with this structure, being able to steal a game on the road is huge to give yourself home field advantage, but winning game one on the road is even bigger. And yeah. it was in our grasp right there, and then just kind of frustrating mistakes over the last four innings or so kind of brought it all down, which is also something that you outlined in the preview to watch out for. So
this is a Houston team where you're not going to get a ton of chances, and you kind of got to knock them down when you get the chance. And the thing we haven't mentioned yet, and something that happened after we recorded the preview pod, is that Lance McCullers is not on the roster. So that does, looking forward in the series, that bodes well or bodes better for the Red Sox, especially with Houston's bullpen maybe being a little more tired. But you brought up the seven-game structure, and I think that did come into play here with the Red Sox. And I was surprised that we didn't see either Nick Pivetta or Eduardo Rodriguez too. We talked about Whitlock, but even if you didn't want to go to Whitlock for that last inning, I guess you're facing the bottom of the order, whatever. You think you can get by with somebody else. You have Pivetta, you have Rodriguez in the bullpen. One of those three guys got to go. And I feel like it was the structure, and it was playing five games with just one day off. I think Cora was a little more gun-shy using his starters, and I think that was a mistake. We've seen them be able to do this in the ALDS, but we saw it in 2018, too. You just take it one game at a time, and you piece the staff together however you need to after that. So I thought it was a missed opportunity, too, to not use at least one of the starting pitchers in the bullpen tonight.
Yeah. Again, I agree with you. I didn't want to see Sale go out there to start the third inning, and I don't know if Pivetta had actually warmed up, but there are tweets that he had been stretching, at least.
Okay.
Somebody tweeted that he was like throwing a ball against the wall.
So I saw that. He was like a kid who just found out his parents are getting divorced, and he went to bounce a tennis ball against the wall.
Yeah, so I don't know if he actually like fully warmed up or just kind of like started, but I fully expected that after that happened and the Red Sox taking the lead and Sale's not so sharpness, that we were going to see Pivetta for the third, and that probably went like, you know, for at least three innings, which I think would have gone a long way to saving this bullpen. They used a lot of guys tonight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Whitlock was basically the only guy that didn't use, who is a guy that you know you're going to be relying on heavily. So I don't really feel great about going into game two with him being the only fresh one. I would have rather have just locked up the win today. Yeah. And it seemed like it was just right there.
Yeah. And, I mean, now there's a lot of pressure on Evaldi to not just pitch well, but pitch deep and pitch efficiently, which, I mean, to his credit, that's what he does. He fills up the strike zone. So it's just a matter of him getting hit or not, I guess. But trying to think. I mean, I guess a few positives. We talked about Kike Hernandez. I guess we should probably talk about him for at least a little bit longer, because he was by far the biggest bright spot. And, I mean, he's been the bright spot this whole playoff run. He's so fun to watch, and I mean, just following people that are fans of other teams. Obviously, people are not very stoked about this ALCS matchup, and I can't really blame them for it. But I saw a lot of people saying Kike Hernandez was the only thing to root for in the series, and I can agree. And he had a great game. He did have another home run in the ninth too, so he had two home runs. He was a triple shy of the cycle, but I think he'll take the extra home run instead. And I mean, no, I don't think we really talked about him much in the previous series. I think I mentioned him just in terms of he can't stay that hot, but apparently he can. I mean, he was the one guy in the offense who you felt good every time he came to the plate.
Yeah, I was really waiting for somebody to just kind of help bail him out. He was doing so much on his own.
And the first home run was just perfect, because they were interviewing Dusty Baker in the middle of that at bat. mid-word Dusty Baker, because oh lord, when he hit it, that was probably the high point in the game. But it was almost all downhill from there. But yeah, it was a tough one for the Red Sox, obviously, like we said. Good news is, I guess, you go into these games hoping that you're going to win one on the road, so they still have a chance to do that. Before we get to game two predictions, anything else that I haven't mentioned that you feel warrants mention here?
Yeah. Rafael Devers, through his first two at-bats, saw only fastballs, four fastballs, and was 2-for-2 with two singles. And then they remembered, oh yeah, his arm is broken, and threw him basically nothing but junk and got him his next three at-bats. That's something to watch as this series continues to unfold.
Yeah, the Devers-Houston matchup is extremely interesting. And I don't know. I mean, he has a habit of kind of making the quick adjustments, so we'll see how much he can do that with the bum arm. Another thing I did forget to mention just very quickly, Chaz McCormick had three hits out of the eight hole. We talked about how this Houston lineup is so good, seven deep. You can't let the 8 and 9 guys get on. And McCormick had three hits. They hit Maldonado with two pitches. That was another big swing point in these games. Both of those hit by pitches really were big moments.
Yeah.
All right. Let's predict game two. Who's winning? What's the score?
See, I just have so much confidence in this offense and Nathan Eovaldi that I feel like game two goes to the Red Sox. I'm going to say 4-1.
Yeah, I'm saying the Red Sox take it. I'm going 7-2. I think they're gonna jump out early, and then Eovaldi's going to be able to hold on. I'm a little worried once they go back to Boston, the rest of the pitching staff has to show up. But for the Eovaldi start, I'm feeling pretty good. But yeah, that'll do it for this one. Hopefully next time we talk to you guys, we'll be a little bit happier, but we do hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a rating and a review if that is applicable. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster, and Keaton is at The Spoken Keats. You can catch up on all of our writing at overthemonster.com. And we're going to be back with you, not right after tomorrow's game, but we'll be back with you Monday morning to recap that one. So until then.